You're listening to the Passive Project Podcast, where we discuss building your online business to make more income, more impact, and give you more freedom in your life. I'm Gemma Bonham Carter, business strategist, mother, lover of systems and automation, and avid coffee drinker. All right, everybody, welcome to this interview with the wonderful Leslie Clavijo. I am so excited to have her here today. Leslie and I met quite a while ago now. We are both bloggers in kind of the lifestyle blogging area, and both kind of took similar paths to starting to become sort of business strategists and business coaches. And so I've loved kind of hanging with her, and you know, she and I were just chatting for half an hour before starting our interview and hitting record because we just have so many things to talk about. So thank you so much, Leslie, for being here.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me, and I can't wait to chat.
Awesome. So, Leslie, why don't you just introduce yourself a little bit, tell folks who you are and what your business is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, my name is Leslie Clavijo, and my website is leslieclavijo.com, and I'm sure you will put that somewhere in the show notes because it is extremely hard to spell. And I am an email marketing strategist, so I teach people how to use email marketing in their business, not just to make a profit, but also to do very valuable market research, to learn the words that your audience is using, to figure out exactly what your audience wants you to create for your business. There's so much you can do with email marketing. But really what I'm starting to get known for is how to launch to little email lists. So often we hear you have to have these gigantic email lists to be profitable, but I've had so much success with little tiny email lists. So I just really want to give people encouragement that it doesn't take a list of 10,000 to be profitable. So we can even touch base on that.
Yeah, today. I think everybody will be excited to hear about that because I know email lists are hard to grow and people get discouraged. So no, we'll definitely touch on that in a sec. So what brought you to specializing in email marketing? Because I know you've had a bit of a path in your journey to getting here. So what did that look like just briefly?
Oh yeah. Okay. So when I was a lifestyle blogger, I had a really big social media following. So I had over 20,000 followers. I still do on Facebook for that page. And I had viral blog posts coming from Pinterest. And one of my viral blog posts was a fix-a-bra. It was fix-a-bra. So if your underwear broke, you could fix it. And so I was getting, oh gosh, like 30, 40,000 page views a day on that post. So I was like, ooh, this is like crazy. So in my first year, I had, I don't know, a million page views. And I was like, this needs to be a product. So I switched gears and I was like, I'm going to create a physical product, and quickly did that. I'm not even going to go down the road of how I figured out how to create a product. I barely remember it this time, but I did it and I launched it. So launching to me at the time was just like put out a blog post, put it on my Facebook, pin it to Pinterest. And I was like, okay guys, family ready. We're going to be millionaires. Now keep in mind this product, I think I had listed it at $4.99 at first. And I was like, all right, here we go. Get ready. And
this is the moment.
This is the moment we've all been waiting for. And I sold one that day. Like the last hour, like it was like 11:59 PM, I remember. And I was like, okay, all right, guys. Now keep in mind, it had been like a 6 month period after that really viral blog post, so the virality had died down a little. But that's when I was like, what the heck? Like, I have this huge Facebook following. Instagram wasn't even around at the time, or if it was, it was in its infancy. And I was like, what is going on? So I started following, or started really like talking to and investigating like some of my friends that had had some really successful launches to see what component I was missing. And you'll probably figure it was the email list.
Right.
So they had been capitalizing on all the traffic that had been coming to their site, and they were capturing those emails. I had not been capturing any of those emails that were coming to my site, showing interest in the subject on that blog post, and, you know, getting their email so that when I had that launch day, I could have sent out an email blast and said, hey, I know you were interested in the DIY version, but look, I now have this little kit that you can carry around in your purse. And anytime you have a breakthrough, 5 seconds, and there you go. You don't have to carry around scissors and Moleskine and all these other, you know, all these other things. So that's when I was like, okay, this makes sense. I have to really get into email marketing. And from that day forward, I kind of like became obsessed.
And you have since, so not only did you do it for Chaotically Creative, which was your blog at the time, but you then even offered email marketing as sort of a service, right, to other businesses. So you've worked with a huge range of services or businesses, I think, right?
Yeah. So I had a couple of like clients here and there. And then my friend Lauren from Restore 316, she develops WordPress themes or Genesis WordPress themes. She hired me on as her core marketing director. And so I was in charge of her entire email marketing strategy and her launch strategy. And so she went from just sending emails out whenever she was launching a new theme. So it was kind of like every quarter, maybe a little bit more than that, to us developing a strategy. So this works even if you're not a course creator. So she has a digital product, which is themes. And what we were doing is we were connecting with her audience weekly in between all of the different theme launches. And we saw an increase in her launches by 600%. So her revenue increased so much just because we were staying in front and we were connecting with them. And that's just like a huge part of what I teach is like, don't just send out emails when you have something to sell or when you have just new content, because a lot of times people only produce new content like maybe once a month. Like you've got to stay in front of them. I say weekly, like once a week, you've really got to connect just like you would on social media. We're so obsessed with like posting most people like once a week on Instagram, once a week on Facebook. Like you really need to do that with your newsletter as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about email marketing, for those that are listening, it can be used for any type of business, like service-based, physical product-based, and digital product-based, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a student that is a farmer. So she's a cattle farmer. She sells beef. And sorry for any of you guys that are vegan or vegetarian, but you know, businesses of all type. And she has a newsletter. So she also collects emails at the point of sale at the local farmer's market. And so she sent out a newsletter to her list and just let them know that she had her beef up for sale and she sold out for her entire season just with that one newsletter. Now, I want to tell you, she had 46 people at the time on her list and sold out for that season. 46 Amazing. People.
Yeah, that's incredible. And yeah. That goes to show you that she got exactly the right people on her list that she needed, right? The power in a tiny list. Exactly. So let's hop into that email-based launching, because I know that's really your secret sauce. So can you take us through a little bit of the process there and what you teach and what you recommend?
Yeah. So as far as launching to your email list, it goes back to making sure that you have the right people on your list. So when you're creating, I call it your ideal incentive. So it's a free, whatever, download, class, workshop. It could be anything. I'm sure that you teach all the different types of freebies that you can, you know, give to your audience. But the whole point of the freebie is that it's attracting the right people. So let me give you an example. If you're a photographer and you're trying to book somebody for a photo shoot, you don't want to give out an incentive that is teaching people how to shoot photos on their iPhone, because then you're teaching them how to be a photographer.
Exactly.
You want to get them in the mindset of, okay, I need to book you as my photographer. So what does that look like? It could be a style, like what should I wear to my photography session? I came up with one the other day for one of my students that was like how to dress for my family photos without looking like a cheesy Sears catalog or something like that. Because you know how everybody's always so, I'm totally guilty of like my kids' photos from when they were little. They're all so like matchy-matchy and it doesn't look very organic, you know? Yeah. Or, I don't know, there's just so many different things. You just want to make sure it's leading to whatever your paid thing is. And if you don't know what your paid thing is yet, you should know what your niche is. So yes. You should have a some sort of idea of this is going to lead to whatever it is that I'm going to sell in the future, right?
Exactly. So having an idea of that target audience and who you want to sell your product to, whatever shape that product might take, and ensuring that you get those people on your list. And yes. This is the big, I have a, it's not that I'm anti-giveaway, but I find that giveaways, you know, sometimes it just is popping a whole whack of people on your list who aren't necessarily people who are going to turn into buyers. How do you feel about giveaways?
I'm anti-giveaway.
You are anti-giveaway.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, back in the day when we first started, like as bloggers, that was like the thing. I am so anti everything that puts the wrong people on your list for the sake of them just being the freebie seeker.
Yeah.
I rather have a small list of the right people that are going to invest in what I'm selling, and that even if it's not right now, even if it's like 6 months from now, that's totally fine. As long as they're engaging and they're consuming the content I'm putting out, that's fine. I don't want people coming in, grabbing my free thing, the giveaway thing or whatever, and just either like getting off the list or just, you know, lurking and not connecting with me. I mean, the whole point of this social media, email marketing, all of this is that we're having a reciprocal relationship. We're like communicating, we're connecting, right?
Exactly. And I can't think of a time in my own experience when I entered a giveaway and then ended up connecting with the people who ran the giveaway. I have always found my own, whether it's mentors or people I look to in certain niches for different, you know, advice, it's always been through something of value where I've downloaded their thing, I get blown away by the value that's in it, and then I keep opening up their emails because it connected with me and it spoke to me.
That's absolutely 100% what I teach. And that's really what it boils down to, is giving value, digging deep and making a connection. Like, gone are the days that we can be just like surface level. And so like I teach my students, and like, we can't just like send newsletters and be like, here's my latest blog post, or here's like, you have to go deeper than that. And you have to personalize things. You have to start like connecting and using email, and just like we do with social media, as a conversation. Like, yeah, get people to respond to you and engage with you just like you would on social media. The whole point of an Instagram post is to get somebody to like it or heart it or whatever, or hit reply or leave a comment. And I do the same thing with email. We want to create a conversation in our emails. And so by doing that, you've got to create value. You have to give them thought-provoking, you know, content in there beyond just, here's my latest blog post.
So on that note, how can we ensure that the structure or flow of our email gets engaged with? Are there some best practices there that we should know about?
Yeah, you definitely want, you want to ask questions. You want to ask for their opinions. You know, a lot of times I ask for opinions and it's not like I'm going to like go and do everything that they tell me. I just really want to be able to get information from them, and it's gold. It is marketing gold to be able to hear where they're at and see what they're thinking and get in the minds. And then once you get information from them, there's where more content comes from right there. So asking questions, but you don't want to just like send an email full of questions. You want to set it up with story. So story is a really big deal. And it doesn't always have to be like present tense story. Like this week I was walking down the street with my kids and you can go back into your history and talk about, you know, I talk a lot about my time as a child care director and stories I learned from children and like the fears that they have compared to like why as adults we still harbor these fears and those kind of things. So people resonate and connect with story more than anything. Lead with a story, end with a question, and see what they say. Now, I'll tell you this, your super fans are the ones that are going to hit reply and answer those questions. So right.
And you want to nurture those people because those are the ones who are going to become your buyers.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And can you talk to us for a minute about subject lines? Because I know that I personally get stuck all the time on what to write in that little box, like whether it should be, should there be capital letters, no capital letters? Should it be a question? Should there have an emoji? Am I telling them what's in the email or am I trying to, like, I don't want to be clickbaity, but I also don't want to be boring, right? So what are some of the key strategies we can use to write subject lines that actually get opened?
Oh gosh, yeah. This is something that I think everybody struggles with, including myself. And the first thing I can say is you just have to test. You just have to test. But a couple of notes on some of the questions you just asked. Emojis depend on your audience. I've heard mixed things. Like some people that have like an uber professional audience, they get really turned off by emojis. They think that's super tacky and it doesn't work well with them. But if you have an audience that's a little bit more casual, emojis definitely pop out in an inbox. And I even notice myself being drawn to emails with emojis. So definitely test that if your audience is accepting of emojis. The question marks and capital letters and dot, dot, dots and things like that, I think it just kind of depends. You know, I use ActiveCampaign right now and it will flag things and tell you, like, you shouldn't use a question mark or you shouldn't. And I didn't know that before when I was using another email marketing service that certain things were being flagged. So I think it kind of just depends. Again, just test it. And I will tell you that I'll tell you one thing that people have said is clickbaity, and that's when you use re in the email subject line. So just don't do that. And I still see people doing that. Your appointment with me today, and you don't even have an appointment with anybody today.
Absolutely. I get those too.
You can't stand that. So that is spammy. I would definitely recommend not doing that. And, you know, I think that it really does help be leading people with curiosity-inducing headlines. I would say pay attention to what you're clicking on. Like whenever I'm struggling with a subject line, I go into my inbox and I start going through all of the emails that I've clicked on. And I'm like, which ones did I open? Which ones were the ones that I was like, oh, that was a good one.
And you could even create a bank of those, right? Like open totally. Up a new doc in your Google Drive of like copy inspiration. We're not going to copy, but it's going to be inspired by, and just plunk those in there. And so when you do have those blank moments, you can go to that list and be inspired.
So two more tips real quick. There are free headline, like our subject line generators online. You can just Google that. And then the second thing is going back to testing, what you want to do is go through your old emails and look at the ones that have the highest open rates. And I always like, and so it depends, like if it's during a launch, like, and you have like 10 emails during a launch, you definitely want to keep an eye on the ones that are like the highest and make sure you're using those during each launch. Or if it's during an automated sequence, you want to use those or tweak those and see if you can replicate them somewhere else. If it's your weekly broadcasts, you definitely want to pay attention to the ones that are having the highest open rates and see what elements you can replicate and use again. I'm always studying like my subject lines to see which ones are doing
so well. How often do you check in on that kind of data, would you say? Or how, you know, do you recommend it?
So if it's a launch, I just do it when I'm doing like another launch. So I'd say, okay, launch time. Let me go back through my previous launches and kind of like look at all the different ones and see which ones did the best. I'll jot them down. I'll say this one had whatever, da 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 da, and I'll go in and like use those. As far as like, so my newsletter is now evergreen, which means that I can now continuously look back over the data over a course of time. And so I'll be honest, it's only been running for about 8 weeks and I haven't gone and looked at it, but it's about time. I need to go and look and see which ones are underperforming because right. I can now change them and see if I can get those open rates a little bit higher on the low performing ones.
And what is an open rate that people should feel good about? Like what should they be striving for?
So that is something that you need to compete against yourself on. Okay. So I would not, because like people talk about open rates all the time and it just depends. Like if your list is 100,000 people, your open rates are going to be so much lower than somebody with a list of 300. Right. Like if your list is 300, you could have an open rate of like 70%. That's freaking outstanding. But if you have 100,000 people on your list, it might be 12%. So compete against yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good tip. So let's get back into the launching process a little bit. So we had talked about creating those really good, I call them opt-ins, you call them ideal incentives, whatever it is to attract people onto our email list. And then I know that you have a bit of a formula for, especially if you're a new, if you've got a new product coming or you have a new product in mind, you say, you recommend that you build your list, listen to your people, launch something, and then create the product. So can you walk us through that a little bit so that people can get really clear on what that means?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I am a big advocate of not creating your product before you sell it. So I like to launch my product, and I've done this with courses. I've done this with my, I do this every year with my planner. So you can do this again with like ebooks, with courses. You can do this with group programs. People do it with physical products too, like a Kickstarter campaign or whatnot. So basically what you're doing is you create like a, if it's a course, you would create an outline of the course to the different modules and create just a rough sales page. And you will build up a wait list. So I always launch to a wait list instead of my entire email list.
And so the way that you're saying that something is coming, and if people want to get on the wait list for it, they need to.
Yeah, and I'll tell them about what it is. Like I'll explain exactly what it is. I may do some Facebook Lives. It just depends if you're using Facebook for your business. Use Facebook Live to start building up the wait list. If you're using Instagram, use Instagram Live. It just depends on where you're at and where you're present in your business. So use those other tools to build up your wait list. And then as your wait list grows, then when you're ready to launch to that wait list, then you're going to do a pre-sell. People get really nervous about this, but what I like to talk about is like my kids, I have two boys, and they're all about GameStop. And GameStop is a store where you buy video games here, and they will buy a video game and wait for it for like 6 months. Like they literally pay like 60, 70 bucks for a game and they don't get it until like 7 months later. I'm like, okay. But the point is you can sell something to people before it's ever created as long as you're clear about the expectations and when they're going to get it. Okay.
Right. And think about Kickstarter. Like you mentioned, that's the basis of Kickstarter. People are used to that model.
Yeah. And so anyway, so then you're going to the wait list, you're going to launch. So you'll send a set of emails and you're going to explain, like, it's just like you're selling, your sales emails. So a sales sequence of emails, and you'll send them to I do like an abbreviated sales page. So it wouldn't just be straight to a checkout. Like you do need like a little bit of social proof. If you don't, of course, this is a pre-sale, so you're not going to have like testimonies about the product. But if you have any clients that you've worked with that relate to what this is about, then you can use those. And again, if it's a course, you would do an outline. So module one is going to cover this. Module two will cover this, blah, blah, blah. And you just make it very clear that this isn't created. If it's a course, you would say the content's going to be dripped out. So what week one, you're going to get it here, da, 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 da. As much details as you can give them. That's amazing. For my planner, you know, they get $10 off if they buy it during the pre-sale. And I say, okay, you're going to get it delivered in 3 weeks. Like you get it, like you'll go to your account and you're going to have it in 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever. And yeah, so the reason why I do this is because validating through having the money does two things. Having the money up front does two things. It puts the biggest fire under your ass you would not believe to get this thing done. Because number one, you're like, okay, I got people's money. I have to get this done. So you're not stretching it out for like a year to create something. I didn't do this with my first course. And that thing took me forever to get done, like a really long time. And the second thing is, you don't truly know if people are going to buy something from you unless you take their money. And a lot of people do these beta launches and they're like, sign up for my course for free. And anybody, like lots of people will sign up for stuff for free, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that course is truly something that's going to sell for real money.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times these freebie beta testers or whatever are not the right people for that program. And they're not going to go through the program. I've given my course away for free to some people and on scholarships or whatever, and they didn't even do it.
Right.
They just, you know, disappeared.
Well, you don't value it as much, right? When you've been given it for free.
Yeah, exactly. So they need to put some skin in the game. And this is how you validate it. And people will always say, well, what if nobody buys? Well, great. Because you didn't just spend 6 months creating something that nobody will buy.
Right. So let me ask you this. What if you have a fairly established list? Like, let's say your list is 2,000 people.
Okay.
And maybe you have had a course before. You had, you know, maybe a course for $197 on some sort of topic, and you're thinking of launching a second one. And you go through what you've just mentioned. And let's say you get two sales, right? Like, let's say it's a very, you do sell some, but it's a very small number in comparison to the size of your audience. Do you consider that kind of a quote unquote failure, or let's call it a lesson learned, and just refund the money to those people and change, you know, take a new path? Or do you stick it through? Like, what are your guidelines around that?
So I've had clients and students that have done both. So I've had one that sold very few, and she went ahead and created the course. Now, I will say she didn't do the exact steps that I recommended as far as launching to a wait list. And I think that really, she left out a few parts, and I think that really affected it. So I helped her course correct for the next launch. So we'll see how that goes. But let's say she didn't. Let's say she did it exactly like how I recommend and laid it out, like the other person did. And she felt like that was not enough validation for her to move forward, and she refunded the money. And so I think that's your decision, ultimately. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think that that you have to ultimately look at the data and say, like what my student did. Did I do everything I could in the right order to make sure that this could have been as successful as it should have been? And she knew the answer was no. And so it was like, okay, let's do this again. And I think if she went around and relaunched and did this again, and it was like a big flop again, then there may be like cause to believe, okay, my audience does not want this. Like, let's stop pursuing this, right? But the other one was like, yeah, this was they don't want this. She's right. Like, she did everything in her power and had a really strong audience. Yeah. So she just refunded. So
she refunded. And then I think people might feel really like battered down if that were to happen to them. So do you know what she went on to do next? Like, did she launch something a little bit different? How did she sort of course correct at that point?
Yeah. So she just pursued something completely different. She was like, my audience is not an audience. It's very similar to the Sweetest Digs and Chaotically Creative. That's the niche. And she was like, my audience did not want a course. Like, that's just, I can tell.
Right. So sorry, for people who aren't familiar with our blogs, the Sweetest Digs and Chaotically Creative are the lifestyle blogs that Leslie and I both run. And so you were saying that type of audience wasn't interested in an online course format for the niche that she was talking to.
Yep, exactly. And so she had noticed the same thing. And it's not to say that there is no lifestyle blog out there that has not had success with courses, but she found the same thing as you and I have, that she could not successfully sell an online course. And so she did go on to doing something else, and she's pursued the MLM sector with a different type of product, and is doing really, really well with MLM on her blog.
Amazing.
And
she was able to use that same kind of toolbox of launching and using her email list, and saw success with that product line.
Yep. And I think it's just, you know, and she's uber, super professional like you said before, like, I'm all about, there are no failures. Like, everything is a lesson. It's all data. Like, we can't get stuck in, this launch didn't work. I'm a super failure. I can't do anything else. Like, to me, it's just like, okay, you can pout for a second, but get up, move on. Like,
absolutely. And the other thing to remember, I need to tell myself this sometimes, because this is something that I struggle with, but okay, you might feel down about the fact that it was, you know, it didn't go the way you thought it was going to go. And maybe you feel you almost feel like embarrassed by that, right? That, okay, you sold one and, you know, you're going to have to refund the money and move on to something else. Nobody actually cares. Nobody is going to remember that you tried to launch that thing that didn't work out. People care about themselves. And I don't mean that in like, mean that in a selfish way, but like, you know, you aren't the center of their universe. You are the center of your own universe. And so yes, for you, it can feel disheartening. And like you said, you can pout for a minute, but if you get back up, dust yourself off and stay consistent and continue to put one foot in front of the other and put out products and build your audience and connect with your people and offer value, your business is going to grow. And I can't think of any really successful online entrepreneur who hasn't had moments like that. And the key to being the successful entrepreneur is getting back up and keeping going.
Oh, 100%. Like, we could talk about that all day long. Like, we are so egocentrical. And I come from an early childhood background, and it's almost like we're 2-year-olds sometimes, where we think that it's all about us, and that everybody like notices all of our mistakes. And I'm like, guys, everybody else is so focused on what they look like and what their mistakes are. They don't notice ours. Like, they really don't, as much as you think they do, they really don't. So it's
they really don't.
Just don't worry about it. And I even talk about that when it's like putting yourself out there, getting on Facebook Live, putting those emails out there. And even if you get that one grammar police person that's, by the way, my grammar is awful and my spelling too, I'm like, it's okay. Y'all, when there's no mistakes in my emails, you know I've hired like the best copywriter on the planet, and it's not coming from me. So just know they're mine.
Yeah, exactly. I think having that, like, it feels humanizing, right?
And we can humans writing them.
Yeah, we can all relate a little more when there's a typo or when our hair isn't perfect on the Facebook Live. I know that the Instagram stories that I tend to get the most like reactions from are when I am kind of like looking like a hot mess and I'm running around with my kids and it's real life and I'm not looking polished and, you know, business ready. So yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think, go ahead. I think at the end of the day, like, going back to what I was talking about with like little kids learn to walk, right? And they fall and they fall again and they fall again. And they never just like sit down and they say, I'm not going to get back up. I'm just not going to walk. I'm going to crawl for the rest of my life, or I'm going to scoot around on my bottom for the rest of my life. And it's like so weird to me as adults that we try what something one time and we're like, oh, it didn't work out, so I'm done. Like, I have to give up. That's not how this works. Like, this is just an ongoing trial and error. And you and I both know this. Like, there are some things that go amazingly well, and it's usually times where we're like, oh, I don't think that was going to go great.
Absolutely. It's like the thing that you do off the cuff without much planning, and it suddenly is the thing that works.
Oh, it was like the viral blog post I had about the bra thing. My mom was my partner at the time. She's like, put it on the blog. I was like, heck no. Put it on there. And it's like viral, right? And that post went on to, that product went on to be featured on the Today Show. Like, who would have ever known?
Yeah.
So it's the, like just don't hold yourself to the standard of one shot. And that's all I've got. You guys, you got all the shots that you want, you know, like just, you just do.
You just have to get up and take them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Leslie, this has been amazing. I feel so excited that we were able to record this interview. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to walk away with, even if they have, you know, zero email list or a small list of a couple hundred people, they have some strategy for moving forward on how to utilize that, how to continue growing it, and how to actually launch something to those people. So where can people... Well, learn more about you. We're going to link up your website in the show notes, but I know you've got a couple of great freebies available for people. So where can they snag those and what is it?
Yeah. So the best place to go is leslieclavijo.com, and you'll see buttons all over my site, but also head over to the Launch Room on Facebook, or my Facebook group on Facebook. And you'll see in the Facebook group, I link to my freebies all the time. So that is a great place.
So the Launch Room Facebook group is the place to be to really connect with you.
Yep. And you can find me on Instagram, leslie.clavijo. So,
okay, yeah. Perfect. We will link all of that up in the show notes. Thank you again so much, Leslie, for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Bye.